Everyone, we'll go ahead and call our meeting to order. We are still waiting on Sheriff Daniels, and we have Matt Medina on the phone. So let's go ahead and get started with our agenda. Paul, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Please stand, everyone, for our pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Morning, Director.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Thank you for being here this morning. We've got a pretty full agenda, as you can see, so I'm going to keep my comments today fairly brief. But as always, with each topic, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. Just a few introductions. As you've all noticed, we have a new board member. Police Chief Tom Kelly from Apache Junction has joined us effective the 27th of last month. So he comes highly respected, a long career with the Drug Enforcement Administration. He's been in Apache Junction now for 13 years, if my math is correct, and we're excited to have him join us. We're still looking at two vacancies. We still have a public member. As most of you know, Rich Wooten resigned his position last month due to just some work conflicts. So in addition to that opening, we still have a jail commander opening that we're trying to fill in conjunction with the governor's office. Other introductions, last month I mentioned the hiring of Ben Henry. Well, he started. He's in week three. He's doing well. He's getting acclimated with the staff and his responsibilities, and he's going to be an asset to our organization. Ann Froge from the Attorney General's office will be your independent advisor for the final action cases today, if we have any questions. And just for your agenda, we'll be removing two cases from your new cases. I think the first one is 17-173 J. McNeil. And then the second one is 18-071 Emily Clark Gribble. Both needed a little additional work, so we're going to postpone those to hopefully get those back in the agenda for next month. And that completes my introductions and announcements. If anyone has any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
No, I'd just like to welcome Tom.
Thank you. Welcome to the board. And I don't know if you want to make a few comments or anything. Or?
No, the only comment I have is it's an honor to be in this position and hopefully serve the board in whatever capacity you need me to do. And I'm just thrilled to be here.
Likewise.
Thank you, sir.
With that, then, Chairman, if you're okay, I'll go right into my director's report.
Yes, please.
Just some items I want to cover. Our budget, our year-to-date, we talked about last meeting, our CGF funds are down about $160,000 for the year. Luckily, with our appropriations from last year and some reductions in vacancy save or some savings through vacancies, our expenditures are down as well. So we're actually doing fairly well this year. As to date, we have reimbursed academies around the state for 537 graduates. We normally budget for about 1,000 graduates. So I'm not sure we'll quite reach 1,000 this year, but we should get pretty close because I know going around, most of our academies are full and expecting pretty large classes to finish out the rest of the fiscal year. So again, we're in good budget shape as of right now. We're still monitoring CGF funds, in May, maybe June at the latest, once the governor's budget's done, I'll present a full budget overview to the board.
I do have one question.
Yes,
on
sir.
That. So far as the reimbursements, as we got those additional funds this year through the governor's office and the budget, does that increase the reimbursements, or is it already just staying as it is?
Right now it's at the $2,500
right.
per recruit that successfully completes the academy, and the $900 for anyone that makes it halfway through. The additional money, it hasn't been finalized yet, so we haven't actually plugged that into the formula yet. I have got some additional requests for additional training throughout the state that we might use those funds for. But if it's possible, we will readjust that formula for the reimbursement to the academy.
Okay, thank you.
Just a few other things I wanted to update you on. We're still working with Navajo Nation DPS. I discussed that last month. They did graduate their second class, I think, 2 weeks ago. And then we're just waiting on an opportunity to go up and an invitation to go up and inspect their academy, which would be the first step of bringing them back on to have a fully approved Arizona Peace Officer Academy. We're just waiting for that invitation. Last time we talked, they said they that they would that would be forthcoming. We just haven't had that invitation yet. And with that, I'll conclude my director's report, again, keeping it brief due to the length of the meeting. And I'd be happy to take any questions anyone might have. All right. And if you don't mind, I'll continue.
Yeah, please, go into the summary.
Just a couple of current events that I wanted to mention. A couple weeks ago, we brought in 6 polygraph examiners from around the Metro Valley area and as well as Flagstaff to discuss some issues we've been having with polygraphs in the new hire audits. It was a really productive meeting. All the members of the compliance section were in attendance. There was a lot of good information sharing, and I think we cleared up a few matters, and then we're also moving forward. As you all know, we certify doctors to do medical exams that are post-approved. We actually talked about maybe creating, one, a standardized form for polygraph examiners to use, because right now, depending on the agency you use, or agency itself, or the private polygraph examiner companies, we're getting a variety of reports. Sometimes the information is in different places, and sometimes it's not the same. So we're in an effort to standardize that, we're thinking about going to a standardized polygraph reporting form that they all said they would be happy to use. And we've also talked about maybe doing a requirement where anyone who was certified, or quote-unquote certified, to do polygraphs for pre-employment for law enforcement would have to come to a class that we would put on, you know, 4 or 5 hours, and to make sure we're all on the same page. Against ongoing discussions, but it was really well received from the staff here as well as the polygraph examiners that were in attendance. We've been meeting with the Arizona Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing. For those of you who might have seen it earlier this year, there was a proposed bill to make some statute changes related to basic police officer training. We had some concerns about the way it was written. We had some concerns about some of the requirements. So what we did was we reached out to them and engaged them in a discussion proactively, and they agreed to drop the bill if we would work with them on putting together some kind of training plan. So we've met with them. We've gotten their lesson plan. We've gotten their outline. We're working with our video productions unit because we feel that's probably the best way to get training out statewide to our more than 14,000 peace officers. So just to give you a heads up, we're working with them now. It'll probably take a few months to get something to put out, but as we get closer, I'll be sharing that information with you. We also hosted some training last week with the Anti-Defamation League here. It was an implicit bias training. There was probably about 25 attendees. It's a relationship we have not had in the past with the ADL, but as you know, they do a lot of training related to hate crimes and bias-related incidents. So we'll be partnering with them to provide locations for their training and to bring in peace officers from around the state. And just a couple other things. I was able to attend the Northeast Arizona Training Center board meeting a couple weeks ago up in Snowflake. I got to tour the academy up there. They just got done with a class, and they're getting ready to start another class. And I think they had, I apologize, I don't have the number in front of me, but I'd never been up there before, and it's a really nice facility. They're getting ready to open up residential housing in the next year, where they'll be able to actually house people on the grounds. It's kind of a neat partnership. They're partner of the technical college, and the construction side of the technical college is building what they call these little small homes that'll house 2 recruits with a bathroom, and then they still have the eating facilities. But it's a really good partnership. They were very appreciative of everything that Arizona Post has done for them over the last couple of years. They praised the reimbursement cycle that Jack instituted prior to his retirement. So again, just creating those relationships and making sure that we're getting out there and listening to them and finding out how we best can serve them. Because again, every academy is just a little bit different on what their needs are and what they need from us. And again, just keeping those lines of communication open, I think to me is very important. And then the last thing I have is this Saturday. I talked about earlier, we'll be doing one of those medical screening classes. I don't know the number, but I think at last count we had about 10 physicians that were going to be here on Saturday for that training. Again, some agencies have expressed some concern to us because the pool of qualified physicians to do the training, it was so small, they were sending their officers quite a ways to get medically cleared as part of their new hire process. So again, by putting on these classes, we're hoping to expand that pool and make it a little bit more efficient. And then the last thing I have, sir, if you don't mind, I'll go into my legislative update.
Please.
Just 2 things. House Bill 2149 is the Arizona Post membership. That bill that we've talked about, it's continuing to move through, and I don't see and not heard any opposition to the bill. And just a refresher, that's where it allows the governor to appoint a police chief from a federally recognized Native American tribe. It does not increase the number of the membership. The membership will remain at 13. And then the last one is Senate Bill 1092. It's a strike everything from DOC related to changing, allowing us an exemption under the rulemaking law to address the age requirement for a DOC correctional officer to begin. Now it's currently 21, and this would allow us to change it to 18 if the board so desires. With that, that ends my legislative update, and I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone might have.
Questions on the legislation?
Morning, sir.
Morning. I received a call earlier today from ACO in reference to a bill, a Brady bill of some sort, that would involve ASPOST. I think there's some new verbiage coming out today on that, just something to maybe take a look at.
Sure.
It would for sure affect ASPOST, and so just something to be aware of.
Yeah, you know, there was some new language 2 days ago, I believe. And
yeah.
Because originally that bill started with language in it that would include Arizona Post.
Right.
That was taken out. I saw new language yesterday, I believe. I met with Jen yesterday, so I'll reach out to Jen.
Okay.
And see if there's new language, additional language. It's been going back and forth quite heavily amongst a couple different groups on that. But I'll see how that's going to impact us. Because again, originally it was, and then it wasn't. So yeah, that's definitely something we'd want to know about. Because originally, as it was written, would have required quite a bit of work on the part of Arizona Post.
And I think the new verbiage would do that again. So at
least
that was the heads up I got this morning. I haven't looked, but that was kind of what.
Okay, I will take a look and I'll report back to the board to make sure you're all aware of what's going on.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
your
updates. Any other questions, comments for the director? Having none, we will move on next on the agenda to the... good morning,
Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good
to have you here. I think you've all had a chance to look at the consent agenda, which has cause for a motion. So I would ask that if you've all reviewed it, I need a motion to approve consent.
Make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I have a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Chris Pittman seconds.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? I did get a speaker sign-up for K6 on the agenda. Is this the time to address that? No? Okay. Any other discussion on the motion?
I need to recuse myself from consent agenda item number 3, case 18-112, please.
And so that be noted on the recusal? Okay, we have that noted. Any other discussion on the consent agenda? Having none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries to approve the consent agenda. Next on our list is a report from the Arizona Department of Corrections. Director Ryan.
Mr. Chairman, members, since our last meeting in February, this post report covers the period of February 11th through March 11th. The Correctional Officer Training Academy, 43 out of 49 cadets graduated, 2 cadets resigned, 0 recycled, and 4 recycled out, none were dismissed. Currently we have 4 classes in session with 86 cadets attending. In terms of vacancies and attrition, of the 6,655 correctional officer positions authorized, 1,155 or 17.36% are vacant statewide. Our current attrition rate in FY19 is 17.82%. No cadets have participated in the waiver program in FY2019. In terms of county and tribal detention IGAs to date in FY19, there have been 13 outside graduates from Salt River, Santa Cruz, Cochise, Pascua Yaqui, and Casa Grande Police Department. In terms of CODA, the 9-week K-9 Academy started March the 4th with graduation scheduled for May the 1st. The K-9 Academy includes 1 instructor from Phoenix Police Department and 1 student from Somerton Police Department and 5 GEO staff attended the Firearms Academy held February 18th through the 22nd.
Thank you, sir. And how do you feel about the 18?
I'm in support of it. We did this 30 years ago. There's a number of people that joined the department at 18. And when I look at the vacancy and where we are, the situation is not getting any better. However, we do have strong support from the governor and the legislature to look at a compensation package this session. It's been 13 years, so it's long overdue. In many units statewide, I have officers working 12-hour shifts, and additionally, they also can work up to 24 hours of overtime per week. So we've sent a lot of cadre out into the high schools. There appears to be a number of people who will be graduating this spring who may be interested in joining the department.
Well, I wish you the best of luck with it. I know we went to 18, and it sure seemed to help us get some good qualified candidates. Did you do the same? Yeah, worked out good. Thank you, Director.
You're
Appreciate
welcome.
Your report. Moving next to the Phoenix Police Department petition for applicant Brent Hendricks.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Masher. Members of the Board, Seth Hargrave is Assistant Attorney General. This agenda item H, is a petition from the Phoenix Police Department to permit the appointment of Brett Hendricks despite his past drug use. I've kind of summarized and addressed this issue in the memo that is in your packet. I would refer you to that, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions, comments, Mr. Hartgrid? Having none?
I believe someone...
I'm sorry.
Is it my understanding that Mr. Hendricks believed that what he was ingesting was marijuana?
That's my understanding based upon the petition.
Do we have any evidence to suggest that it wasn't marijuana?
Well, the issue comes down to what is considered marijuana under the definitions of the statute. Straight leaf marijuana is clear. Once it starts getting altered, then it's a question of whether or not it constitutes cannabis, which would be a dangerous drug subject to a 7-year wait. So it's made from the cannabis plant, whether it's marijuana or cannabis. It's kind of reviewing the statute, somewhat up to the board to decide how the board's going to view it.
Okay. Any other questions?
I think someone may be here from Phoenix
yes,
to address
please.
You.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Right. Assistant Chief Louis Tovar here to represent Police Chief Jerry Williams on the matter before us here. I'd like to speak on behalf of a couple of actual of our new hires that are currently in the academy. I do want to clarify these are not applicants. They're actual recruits that are at the Phoenix Regional Academy, currently in Class 5 for 23, progressing nicely in about week 14 towards their graduation. This case, of course, was brought to our attention as a result of a post-audit. The first is Mr. Joseph P. Booker. Oh, I'm sorry. You were talking about Mr. Hendricks first? Correct?
Yes, sir.
Brett Hendricks, also a recruit at the academy. He came to us with a sizable background as he was in the Marine Corps, and upon discharge, he began working in the service industry, also attending college. On his personal history packet, he reported for using marijuana 6 times in his lifetime, twice after the age of 21. His last usage was in April of 2015. On his continuation sheet, he explained that he experimented with marijuana at an early age in high school. He explained that he tried it in high school 4 times. He subsequently joined the military, and when he was discharged, he tried marijuana once again due to peer pressure from several of the Marines that had also been recently discharged. His last marijuana usage came in the form of an edible, which he described as a cookie or a brownie back in 2015. Mr. Hendricks believed that what he was consuming was marijuana, not a THC extract, as this is evident on a successful polygraph exam which was administered August 16th of 2018. Therefore, I'm asking the board to view Mr. Hendricks' drug uses as experimental. It's not clearly It is not clear as to what exactly was in the cookie or the brownie. However, since the incident occurred in 2015, it would be impossible for the applicant to know what the exact ingredients of that edible was. The post is presumptive that this is narcotic, and we're asking for the board to be exemptioned to Rule 13-14-105A14, which would require that 7-year wait. Since this use is, was back in 2015, obviously we're asking for the exemption of the remaining years. Under Rule 14-4-105A15, we would also like the board to consider this marijuana's usage as experimental.
Thank you, sir. Is there any questions? You know, I think right now, Mr. Director, aren't we currently looking at some studies on the marijuana use, and there's some things we're actively trying to pursue right now so far as where what direction we need to be going. So
that is correct, sir. We're taking a look and trying to determine if we should be considering marijuana as marijuana,
right,
or as marijuana and cannabis as it's delineated in Title 13, Chapter 34. We're trying to figure out, because what we come into is this issue here where someone ate a brownie with the intention of ingesting marijuana, and now we are looking at it as a presumption that they used an extract. Well, I don't think anyone other than whoever produced that cookie or maybe purchased that cookie or brownie back in 2015 that this recruit used can tell you what was in that, whether it was a leafy marijuana or it was an extract. And that becomes the concern for us. And currently, as I've been advised, it would be incumbent upon the applicant to prove, the burden of proof would fall on them to prove that it was not an extract. And again, I just think there's a little bit too much gray area there. So we're looking for a possible rule change, and we'll be doing a survey statewide to do that.
Okay, thank you. And that's to take into consideration as I ask for a motion here. Is there any other discussion, questions, anything? Having none, may I ask for a motion so far as an exemption for Mr. Hendricks?
I move that we grant the exemption.
I have a motion to grant the exemption. Is there a second?
Chuck Ryan, second.
I have a second. Is there any further discussion?
Can we just be clear as to what you said, grant an exemption?
But okay.
I'll amend my motion.
Okay, and I want to get this right.
So just to be clear, are we going to need two different motions then for two different issues? I would refer you to the last page of my memo. I have potential motions depending upon what this board decides. But you want to see two? It depends upon... Which one I pick? It depends upon whether you want to classify the item as cannabis or marijuana. Would we be able to classify it as marijuana based on the current rules, though? The way I read the rules, it appears to be cannabis. The board can certainly look at that differently. Well, we can certainly discuss it after the motion, so...
I would say that the motion... The example would be this last one here on the page. If you want to give that motion, and then if there's any other legal questions on it, we can go from there.
Okay. We'll read that in. I move that the board determines that Mr. Hendricks' consumption of the edible marijuana brownie cookie constitutes the use of cannabis and grant the request for waiver of the 7-year restriction from AAC R13-4105A14, based upon the information submitted by the Phoenix Police Department. I believe that the best interest of the law enforcement profession would be served and the public welfare and safety would not be jeopardized by the waiver.
I have an amended motion and a...
Chuck Ryan, second.
And Director Ryan seconds that motion. Is there any other discussion on that motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries unanimously. We'll move on to the next case with applicant Joseph Hooker. Mr. Hargis?
Yes, essentially, this is the same issue, just a different edible. It was a brownie, and the time frames are a little bit different, but otherwise, it's the same as the previous case.
Questions, comments? And I would ask for a motion. Oh, was there someone here that needed to speak?
I can speak for...
I think if it's pretty much the same, is there any questions, comments? Okay, thank you. Comments, questions then? If nothing, I would ask for a motion in reference to Mr. Joseph Hooker.
Paul Ehler, I move that the board determine that Mr. Hooker's consumption of the edible marijuana brownie constitutes the use of cannabis and grant the request for waiver of the 7-year restriction from AAC Rule 13-4-105A14 based upon the information submitted by the Phoenix Police Department. I believe that the best interest of the law enforcement profession would be served and the public welfare and safety would not be jeopardized by the waiver.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Chris Pittman seconds.
I have a second. Is there any further discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Chief. Mr. Hargraves.
This is agenda item J involving another petition, this one from the Sowarita Police Department regarding Christina D. Carr Cody. Again, I have a memo on this issue. This case has to do with prior use of hydrocodone. I believe someone is present from the department to address you, but before that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Mr. Hargrave? Having none, then we will ask who would like to speak on this. Morning, sir.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and members of the board. My name is Sergeant Mike Falquist. I'm with the Sarita Police Department. Unfortunately, Chief Noland wasn't able to appear before you today, but I'd like to thank you two for taking the time to hear our request for a waiver for our current recruit, Ms. Christina Carcody. Ms. Christina Carcody used hydrocodone an estimated 10 or more times in 2003 when she was in the 9th or 10th grade. Her motivation for use at the time was due to an abusive relationship, and she stopped after realizing she was going down the wrong path. 14 years later, in 2017, she took a hydrocodone pill that belonged to her husband and then went to see her doctor. Her doctor modified her prescription, or birth control prescription, which was the cause of her extreme pain. When the pill was taken, it was designed, or taken for its designed purpose and not for a nefarious reason. Ms. Christina Carcody is now 30 years old, has never been arrested, and only received a couple of traffic tickets since being an adult, with the last being in 2011. She also previously worked as an animal patrol officer for Pima County, where she served honorably. Ms. Carcody has also successfully passed all portions of our testing process to include in-depth polygraph and psychological examination, and she has been forthcoming in all of her applications and has not denied or attempted to hide her actions, and she has shown remorse for her actions. My department does not believe that granting Ms. Carcody her law enforcement certification would bring any negative light to the law enforcement profession or our agency. Ms. Carcody is currently in week 8 at the Pima County Sheriff's Department Regional Academy and is currently satisfactorily passing all portions of the curriculum, and right now she has a 98.32% academic average. With the facts and circumstances of Ms. Carcody's previous prescription drug usage, I humbly request on behalf of my agency that the board would consider granting a waiver for Ms. Carcody for her past drug usage.
Thank you, Sergeant. Is there any questions? Oh, it looks like you're thinking.
I had a question for Mr. Hargreaves. Does this require two motions?
That's up to you. There was a secondary use in 2017, and she subsequently got the wishing to propose these medications. She subsequently got a prescription for it. If the board determines that's an improper use, then you may require two motions. If you feel that that was a proper use because she subsequently got a prescription, you just need one on the experimentation issue.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I can.
Yes, please.
She actually didn't get a prescription for that. She took the pill and then went to see her doctor to see if that's something she would need to get. It was her birth control that was causing the severe menstrual cramp pain. She was having an adverse reaction to it, and they modified that, and that rectified the issue.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions from the board? May I ask for a motion, then?
To grant the petition for a determination that the drug usage by Christina D. Carr Cody was experimental.
Chuck Ryan, second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And the motion carries. Next, we're going to be moving into final action cases. And I think what I'm going to ask for on this is some legal advice. This is a case that's gone on quite some time. It has some very unique issues with it. And I think what I would like to ask of our attorneys some legal advice and go into executive session after we, I think I need to identify all those on the board.
And Mr. Chairman, I would request that you call the case.
Yes, you bet. This would be case number one in the final action cases. It is case 14055, the Dustin Dionne case. And I think we want to get some legal advice on this. It's a very unique case, and I'd like to identify those of us that are present on the board. I think we can start out with, I think Matt is on the phone.
Matt Medina
on the phone. Director, if we start with you and just go down here.
Chuck Ryan.
Tom Kelly.
Mark Daniels.
Scott Masher.
Paul Ayler, I recused myself previously on this matter, so they need to recuse myself on
that. And let that be noted.
Jamie Kelly.
Chris Pippen.
And we still have a quorum. And so I would ask for a motion to go into executive session for some legal advice.
I'll make that motion.
So moved. I have a motion. Is there a second?
Chuck Ryan, second.
I have a motion and a second. Discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
And the motion carries. Please give us a little time here, and we'll try to get you back in as quick as we can. Thank you. We've got just about everybody back in. We'll go ahead and call our meeting back to order. Mr. Hargraves, we are on case number 14-055, and we're going to try to limit to 10 minutes per side here on this. Thank you, sir.
This is a case involving Dustin Dionne. This matter first came before you in September of 2015, where you voted to initiate proceedings. A hearing was subsequently held in 2017. The board voted to revoke certification. The case then went up on appeal to the state superior court on the issue of the findings and the subsequent violation. In this particular case, Mr. Dionne, while off duty, Got into an altercation on the freeway with another driver, followed that driver off the freeway through the streets of Scottsdale to the individual's place of business where he pulled a weapon on the individual when he got out of his car to find out why Mr. Dion was following him. Mr. Dion suddenly took off. The other driver followed him, called 911. A Phoenix sergeant who monitored the call called to check on Mr. Dion afterwards. Mr. Dion provided false statements to that on-duty sergeant. He subsequently provided false statements to the Scottsdale criminal investigator who was following up on the call. And basically what he told both of them is that this individual followed him. He was driving through, wasn't familiar with the area, driving through the streets, pulled into a parking lot to see if the individual was following him. The individual, according to him, followed him into the lot, drove past him, jumped out of his car, and came charging at him. That was not the case. It was Mr. Dion who followed him into the place when the Scottsdale officer said, asked him, so you just happened to follow him into his place of business? He terminated the call, told him to speak to his union reps. When the board voted to revoke, there were findings of dishonesty, recklessly displaying a weapon. On appeal, they did not challenge the board's findings of dishonesty. They challenged strictly the reckless display of the weapon. On appeal, the Superior Court upheld the board's findings and conclusions. However, they vacated the penalty of revocation, finding that the board should have considered his mitigation letters that he attempted to provide after the hearing. So the case is before you. Findings of fact, conclusions of law, are as they were when the board first took action. The Superior Court judge indicated that she's not making a recommendation as to what the penalty should be. The board can still impose revocation. However, she suggests that you consider the mitigating letters first. But when you look at the conduct that's involved, it supports revocation. The board has traditionally revoked when an individual has lied to criminal investigators. In fact, 2 months ago, this board unanimously voted to do the same thing to another individual who lied to criminal investigators from a DUI stop. This case has more than just that. It also has the reckless display of the weapon. When you look at the facts and circumstances, the appropriate outcome and discipline in this case is revocation. Now, looking at the mitigation letters, some of those individuals who wrote the letters also testified at the hearing. There's also a letter from Chief Williams. So if you look at that letter, it's somewhat suspect as to whether she's even familiar with the facts of this case. In that letter, she references that he's been an exceptional employee since the incident in 2012. Well, the incident didn't happen in 2012, it happened in 2013. She references how she had put a medal around his neck in March of 2016. She wasn't chief until October 2016. Months later, she was still out in California. So, and she also says that he told her about, she was confident based upon what he told her. But she doesn't indicate what he told her. The record in this matter shows that he changed his story several times, which led to the findings of dishonesty. This case is before you to reconsider the penalty based upon the facts and the violations in this case. I'd ask the board to consider reimposing revocation. Thank you.
Questions? Sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Eric Wilson on behalf of Dustin Dion, who's seated here with his wife, and this with the support of the men and women of Phoenix Police Department, supporting retention of his certification. Interesting that the state has such a strong argument when it comes to everything but what it needs to focus on here. Why is it important that revocation here is the driving force? Let's look at the facts. The board should be in possession of a packet I had sent. Are you in possession of that? Okay, great. Because the evidence is crucial. Because this will be the first time that the board actually considers mitigating the evidence. The board was ordered by the court after they reversed the revocation to reconsider the imposition of discipline, now considering all the facts, including mitigation. And I realize that some of the board members here today haven't been in the previous proceedings, so let me briefly go over some of the facts. As my colleague discussed, in March of 2013, an off-duty officer, Officer Dion, was northbound on the 101 heading to a golf game. He encountered a chronic road rage offender, Mr. Jawad. Mr. Jawad proceeded to engage Officer Dion. He began brake checking him multiple times, crossing several lanes of traffic, and Dion at every point attempted to go around him. Until it finally, Officer Dion figured he had enough, he has to go on the surface streets now to try to reroute to his destination. Once again on the surface streets, Mr. Jawad brake checked him and then cut across three lanes of traffic. And at this point, Officer Dion made it a point. He said, I'm going to follow him to obtain his license to report him. He didn't want to take any enforcement action. He did not want a confrontation on that date. And he followed Mr. Jawad into the business complex, where Mr. Jawad whipped his vehicle into a parking space, quickly flung open his vehicle, exited his vehicle fast, rapidly approaching Dion with an angry look on his face, his hands waving and yelling explicitives. The evidence shows that these are pre-fight indicators, and Dion's training told him that. He perceived a threat, and he told PSB that, and he's always maintained that. And Dion was seated in a tactical disadvantage. He was seated in his car, seat-belted in with the window open, and Mr. Jawad proceeded to advance, getting within striking distance to Dion, at which point he brandished his weapon in a defensive manner. He put it at the low-ready position, held it at the instrument cluster, not at anybody else, extended his left hand and told him, get back, using an explicative. Once Mr. Jawad got within striking distance, he saw the weapon and retreated back to his vehicle. It worked. The defensive display, the exact reason why we have the statute, worked in this case. Now, Mr. Jawad then proceeded back to his vehicle and then started to follow Officer Dion. And both parties called 911 at that time. Those are the facts surrounding the reckless display. And mitigation is present because what Officer Dion did was he relied on the training that he received from Arizona Post, from his experience since 2006 of being an officer, to determine that this man was intending to do him harm, and he acted in defense. The remaining allegations regarding dishonesty, 2, 3, and 4, are derived from two separate informal conversations that Officer Dion has subsequent to this incident. The first one was 5 minutes afterwards. Officer Dion was admittedly flustered from this incident. It was about 5 minutes after the incident, and he was attempting to help the sergeant gain an understanding of exactly what happened. This was a quick rundown. It was not an investigation. Dion was stressed. He was trying to read his GPS. He was trying to reroute through unfamiliar streets. He was receiving multiple phone calls, and he was trying to ensure that he wasn't still being followed by Mr. Jawad, the individual who had just aggressively approached him. Now, Dion has consistently admitted that the statements that he made to this Sergeant Nielsen regarding the following into the parking lot and off the interstate were inaccurate, but he cured those inaccuracies approximately 1 week later when he gave his PSB interview to his internal affairs. We are not here on post-Garrity lies, folks. Now, the second call pertaining to allegation number 5 happened 4 hours after the incident. When a Scottsdale police officer called Officer Dion, Dion returned his call on the golf course, and he gave him, a brief rundown. And this call occurred, and during that call, Dion has consistently admitted that he misspoke when he gave this account to Officer Schwartz. Officer Schwartz, by the way, who characterized Dion's call as vague and confusing. This was another pre-Garrity statement, and Dion cured this inaccuracy through a letter from his attorney to Scottsdale approximately 1 week later. Now, both of these calls, again, are pre-Garrity, and the information that he was getting about who was following whom is really immaterial when you're looking at the motives, the primary objective of Officer Dion as he's conveying the information. He's trying to communicate what happened in that parking lot. Now, the evidence established the details that he gave afterwards were accurate as far as the interaction between he and Jawad. Dion testified he had no motive to lie, and clearly there isn't one. He gains nothing by changing the order of who followed whom into the parking lot when it comes down to it. You may not like it, but Officer Dion, in making the decision to follow this individual to obtain his license plate, was not a violation of state law, Phoenix Code, or post regulations. He was somewhere where he could lawfully be. We may not like his decision to follow, but those are the facts we're here with, and that's 6 years ago. He's still thinking about that. So today you're here tasked with the appropriate level of discipline. Revocation is excessive and inconsistent with past pre-Garrity dishonesty charges, especially when you consider the mitigation. Mitigating evidence was given to you in the packet in the chief's letter. Interesting, my colleague attacked the chief's letter when the chief's letter speaks for itself. And the chief's letter speaks volumes as to her judgment of his character and his fitness for duty. She wants him to remain as an officer, and she's confident with her abilities. Unfortunately, she couldn't be here today. She wished she could. But her letter says as much. But her actions speak even louder. Because after this board revoked Officer Dion's certification back in April of 2017, she hired him on in a non-enforcement capacity for Phoenix PD to be a dispatcher, where he still currently works today. He's still serving in whatever capacity he can because that's the dedication we're talking about. And when you look at his career as a whole, you know that he displayed remarkable dedication to public service and the policing profession, despite this one off-duty incident 6 years ago. Throughout his law enforcement career, beginning in 2006, Dion had a sterling career with PD, receiving positive performance ratings and no discipline whatsoever. In April of 2014, after a year-long internal investigation into this incident, Officer Dion was terminated. And the Civil Service Board brought him back, a board of citizens. And that ultimately amounted to about a six-month suspension. But Officer Dion proved himself once he came back, once again as a stellar officer, for three more years. Because he immediately, in the first 3 months of coming back, was the top recapper on his squad. He earned the Medal of Life Saving and the highest distinction Phoenix police officer can get, the Medal of Merit. This is on top of his 10 commendations. Now, the only thing left to determine is the post-Garrity, because my colleague suggested that with dishonesty, post always revoked. But that's not the case. Only post-Garrity untruthfulness allegations have resulted in revocation. The alleged false statements here are not post-Garrity, and historically, post standards distinguish between pre-Garrity and post-Garrity. This was acknowledged by a member of this board in April of 2017 during this proceeding who voted against revocation. That decision did not consider the distinction, and the mitigating evidence was not allowed at that time. The distinction, which is highlighted in our motion for review, which you had received, is evidenced by the board's own integrity bulletins. We did a review going back to 2013. They clearly indicate that the board's distinguishing standard, suspending certifications, or taking no action when pre-Garrity dishonesty was found. Opposing counsel brought up a case saying just last month we did this. Well, just last month, or just recently in the last published integrity bulletin, we have another one-year suspension where an officer provided false statements to investigators, and he provided false statements to a supervisor by claiming the interview went well. That's a summary. But in closing, I don't think anyone here can dispute or truly understand what Officer Dion and his family and his support system have been through. Significant emotional toll, financial hardship. It's been a nightmare in the last 6 years. He served a six-month suspension from the termination to the reinstatement in 2014, only to go back to work for three more years and have his certification revoked in April of 2017. Since revocation, this officer has endured a nearly 2 years of suspension. Consider that. But Officer Dion and his wife, his family, they've endured this so that one day he can proudly wear the Phoenix badge again. That's our hope for you today. That's our plea. The mitigating evidence weighs overwhelmingly against the revocation, and a retroactive suspension of 2 years would remain consistent with the board's long-held standard distinguishing pre-Garrity untruthfulness. We respectfully request that the board consider all the evidence in this matter, especially those that are mitigating. We implore you to allow a valued Phoenix officer to return to his community and retain his certification. We thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much. Questions? Mr. Hargraves, do you have to follow up?
The counsel said that who was following who was immaterial. That's simply not the case. In statements that were given to the investigators at the time, the other driver indicated that it was Mr. Dion who was tailgating him. It was Mr. Dion who followed him off the freeway. Mr. Dion followed him to his place of business. And after this individual, Mr. Dion followed, Mr. Jawad was followed off the freeway through the streets of Scottsdale to his place of employment. He got out trying to find out, what's going on, what is your problem? To which Officer Dion pulled his weapon on him. So who's following who is material. Because Mr. Jawad had this stranger follow him to his work and pull a gun on him. And afterwards, when Mr. Dion spoke to the Phoenix on-duty sergeant and the Scottsdale criminal investigator, he could have said, I was trying to get his plate, I specifically followed him. No. He made no comments of the sort. He said, there's this guy following me, I don't know why. Well, he knows why, because he had just followed him to his place of business and pulled a gun. He knows why he was following him. Mr. Jawad reacted to someone that basically accosted him at work. Now he's, you know, trying to convey what happened in the parking lot. He wasn't. What he told the criminal investigator and the on-duty sergeant was, I pulled into this parking lot to see if he was still following me. He did follow me, passed me, pulled into a spot, jumped out and charged me. That's not what happened. He followed the other individual. What he was conveying was a fantasy, trying to cover up for the fact that he pulled a weapon. Now, counsel said that only post-Garrity results in revocation. That's not the case. And he's referencing a false statement to investigators. Those are not the same investigators we're talking about here. We're talking about a criminal investigator investigating a road rage incident who Mr. Dion called him. The conversation happened after Mr. Dion called him back. He didn't have to call him back when he did. He could have called any time. He called him back, and he lied. 2 months ago, same instance. It was a criminal investigator investigating a DUI. The individual said, I wasn't driving the car. The board revoked for that misconduct, that lie to the criminal investigator. Here, we have more than just one lie. We've got the lie to the criminal investigator. We have a lie to the on-duty sergeant. And we have the reckless display of the weapon. This is not conduct that is permissible for the general public. It shouldn't be permissible for a police officer who is held to a higher standard. Thank you.
Questions, comments, for anyone? Then I would ask the board for a motion, but I would also like to make sure that everyone has read and familiarize yourself with the packet that each of you were afforded of the letters. I would also ask that all of you acknowledge if you have read the Maricopa County remand order and have familiarized yourself with that. Having said that, I would ask for a motion.
Chairman, I would request that the members state out loud or that you tell the members as to whether they have read the packet and the Superior Court order.
Yes, ma'am. I would ask that if you have read both the packet with the mitigating letters as well as the remand order, please acknowledge so with your name and that you have done so.
Chris Pittman, yes.
Jamie Kelly, yes.
Scott Masher, yes.
Mark Daniels, yes.
Tom Kelly, yes.
Chuck Ryan, yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Matt Medina, yes.
Matt, thank you very much. Forget about you. Okay. Again, I would ask for a motion.
I'll make a motion. In case number 14-055, reconsideration for the remand from Maricopa County Superior Court in regard to this action. Based on the conclusion of law and finding of facts, I make the motion for revocation.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Chuck Ryan, second.
I have a motion and a second. Does there need to be any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 And those, no. Then the motion carries unanimously. And we will be moving on to the next case. Why don't we take a break? 5 minutes. Call this meeting back to order. Mr. Hargraves, if we will continue on with final action case number 214145.
This is the case involving Phoenix Police Officer Joshua Adams. This matter came for a hearing before the Office of Administrative Hearings for 5 days in September and November of last year. Case involves a 2013 domestic incident between Mr. Adams and his wife where police were called by his wife complaining that he had followed her, was banging on her window, and frightening her and the kids. When the sheriff's deputies, he subsequently left, sheriff's deputies arrived, he returned. There was a, during discussion with the deputy, he was asked for his ID, said it was in the car, he was asked to retrieve it. He went to his car, got in, and drove away. The board initially initiated proceedings at Mr. Adams' request. He requested a hearing, but requested the hearing be stayed while he pursued civil action. That was done when the civil action was finished. The case eventually came back to the board for potential additional issues regarding discrepancies between statements to PSB and statements he gave under oath in his civil case. The board reinitiated. Matter went to hearing before the Office of Administrative Hearings. Before you is ALJ Mahalski's recommended decision. In that decision, she found that Post had failed to meet its burden on any of the allegations or alleged violations. We would ask that the board accept the recommended decision and close the file. Be happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments for Mr. Hargraves? And is there someone else that would like to speak on this?
I believe so.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Eric Wilson on behalf of Joshua Adams, seated here. For once, we agree that the ALJ got it right. The case needs to be closed.
Thank you, sir. Any other questions, comments? If not, could I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to recuse myself.
Would that be noted?
Paul Ayler.
May I have a motion, please?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I need to recuse myself as well.
Okay, do we still have a quorum then?
Question.
No. No.
Mr. Chairman, can we possibly table this for a minute? I might be able to get, based on the time now, get another member on the phone.
I would like to finish this today, if at all possible. We're on the same page to do this, so give us a few minutes. We'll try to table this down a little bit so we can finalize this for you today. And why don't you do that? Let's move down to Mr. Hargraves, number three. I'm sorry. Mr. Brackle, sorry about that. 16-106.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Mark Brechtel with the Attorney General's Office, and the case involves Officer Joe McGow with the Peoria Police Department. In front of you is an administrative law judge's decision in this matter. The case was heard in February. Case stems from an incident that occurred October 1st, 2015, 3.5+ years ago. It involved a conversation between a patrol sergeant, a Peoria police patrol sergeant,
and her squad officer, Officer Joe McGow. The conversation occurred in the police department in the report writing area and involved whether a police report had been completed timely or not. At the end of this several-minute conversation, the patrol sergeant concluded and was convinced that the officer had been, that Officer McGow had been dishonest with her. And so that's what the case is about. The case went to hearing, as I mentioned, in February. An abundant amount of evidence was presented. Nine witnesses testified. Over a dozen exhibits were presented. And at the end of the day, after a hearing, the judge concluded that Post, the state of Arizona, had not carried its burden past the 50-yard line and established its case that Officer McGow had been dishonest. And the judge, in her opinion, summarizes how she arrived at that conclusion, that Officer McGow was not dishonest, in fact. And so based on that, the state of Arizona and the Attorney General's office recommends that the board accept the judge's decision. Are there any questions?
Having none, I'd like to respond, or is there someone that would?
There are.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the board, my name is Catherine Bailey. I'm here on behalf of Joseph McGow, who is sitting to my left with his wife. We also have members of the Peoria Police Department. In fact, we have Chief Miller, who actually came and testified at the hearing. Chief Miller is sitting in the back. We also have Assistant Chief Balding and Assistant Chief Pena here, as well as Commander Christofferson, all came and testified on behalf of Officer McGow. We agree with the Administrative Law Judge's opinion. We would ask that you would accept the findings of facts, conclusions of law, and her recommendation. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Having no questions, may I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to recuse myself on this, Paul Ayler.
May I have a motion?
I'll make a motion that we accept the conclusion of facts, conclusion of law, finding of facts, and close this case.
Mr. Pittman, second.
A motion and a second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Mr. Hargraves, moving on to 16156.
This is a case involving Richard Pena, former Phoenix police officer. Post received a termination report in October of 2016. Officer Pena was one of three officers involved in a traffic stop where the driver was told he could be let go if he ate the marijuana that was found in his possession. He subsequently ate the marijuana and as a result eventually reported that to ask for a supervisor to talk to them about the conduct that had occurred. The two other officers had voluntarily relinquished. Officer Pena did not cooperate with the internal affairs or the criminal investigation. He resigned. The board did initiate proceedings. At one point, there was a proposed consent agreement that came before you for a three-year lapse suspension, which the board rejected. That consent was worked on by my predecessor. Having the board rejected that, the next step was to go to hearing. As we prepared for hearing, the driver who had been required to eat the marijuana could not be found. We no longer have contact with him. He's not responding. So we were unable to have him available to testify at a hearing. And based upon that, there's concerns about the ability to meet our burden without his available testimony. We do have his statements that were made to the internal affairs investigators. However, we could use that at a hearing. It would go to the judge could consider that and give it little or no weight or a lot of weight, given the fact that he wouldn't be there to be cross-examined. So without his testimony, we feel that we cannot proceed. So we'd ask the board to reconsider its prior action to initiate proceedings and either
vote to resolve in the future. If you believe this can be resolved through a polygraph, should he attempt to go somewhere else or to just close the file if you see fit, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? I'll ask for a motion, please.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't respond to that motion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Are you okay?
Oh. Apologize.
It's quite all right, Mr. Chairman. Members of the board, Eric Wilson on behalf of Officer Pena. We do agree that the board should reconsider it, especially if the post can't carry its burden. But we disagree on the one hand as far as leaving the matter open. Leaving a matter open when due process is at hand can do a couple of things. First of all, it can stifle any future potential opportunities for employment, as well as having this loom over his head for quite a long time. Now, we know that the typical process is a polygraph as far as pre-employment screening, and perhaps the post could audit at that time, but to keep the matter open, it wouldn't be proper. That's our position, sir.
Thank you very much. Comments, questions? May I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, Chuck Ryan, I make a motion to close this matter.
I believe you have to first grant the reconsideration, second rescind your prior action, and then leave that to Ms. Roach.
And that is correct. You would need to make a motion to grant the motion for reconsideration, and there are two of them here, so it would be, if you're going to move to close the matter, it would be respondent's motion for reconsideration and rescind the matter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I make a motion for reconsideration on this matter.
And do we need it to close as well, I believe, a motion for that?
That's correct, and again, if you're going to grant, making a motion to grant one of the motions for reconsideration, there are two on the table here. There's the state's motion, and then there's respondent's motion. To recap, the state's motion is a motion for reconsideration and to leave the case open, I believe, resolve in the future. The respondent's motion is to close a motion for reconsideration and to close the case.
And I believe that's what you were saying, Director Ryan, is reconsideration of the motion and to close the case.
Yes. That's my motion.
We also have to rescind the prior motion to initiate.
Mm-hmm. And also to rescind the motion to initiate the action.
You need two separate motions, Mr. Chair, I think.
Correct.
You need two?
That's correct.
You got to reconsider first.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members, I recommend reconsideration of this matter and to close the case. Is that acceptable?
To rescind the action referring the matter to hearing.
I make a recommendation to reconsider the matter and close the action. I'll tell you what, I withdraw and I'll have someone else make the recommendation.
What she said.
Still move to her.
And so we're rescinding the motion. We are.
Are rescinding referral of the rescinding initiation of the action.
Yes, please, Mark.
I'll make a motion that we rescind the previous initiating proceedings and close this case.
Chris Pippen, second.
Well,
grant the motion.
Motion's on the floor.
You want two separate motions? You want me to split it? You want me to split it?
Well, that's fine. I think we need a motion then as to whether or not you're granting a motion for reconsideration.
Okay, I can do that. Let me just break it down to two. I'll make a motion that we rescind our initiating proceeding order from this board.
There's the first motion. Is there a second?
Chris Pittman, second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
And the motion carries. The second motion.
Make a second motion that we close this case.
Second. Okay. And is that a motion to grant respondent's motion for reconsideration and close the case?
Yes. Make a motion to grant respondent's motion to close the case.
I think I can second that.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I think we can also move back now to case number 14145. I believe, Matt, you have someone available now.
Mr. Chairman, I've got Angela Fever on the phone. He had a commitment at the state capitol, but he has a few minutes to take care of this matter for us.
Okay, and he is familiar. Andy, you familiar with what we're working on here? All right, thank you very much. May I have a motion on case number 14-145? And I think we had talked about closing this out, that everybody was on same page there.
Mm-hmm. I'll make a motion to accept the administrative law judge decision and order the case closed.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Ryan, second.
I have a motion, a second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Fleaver, thank you for being on the phone there in such a short notice. Appreciate it. Thank you. That's okay. All right, we're moving on to case number 518-130, Mr. Hargraves.
Thank you. This is a case involving former Phoenix police officer Chris Tiona. The board had initiated proceedings on this case back in January. Officer Tiona was in an investigator training course where he submitted plagiarized material. When he was questioned about it, he initially denied submitting the assignment containing information he copied from another. During the internal affairs investigation, he acknowledged that he had in fact done so. Before you for consideration is a consent agreement for a one-year suspension of certification beginning September 5th, 2018 and ending September 4th, 2019. They would ask that the board accept the consent agreement to resolve this case. Happy to answer any questions.
Having none, may I have a motion, please?
Paul Ayler, I move to accept the consent agreement.
Officer Tiona's representative is here. I don't know if she wants to.
If you have any questions, Mr. Chair and members of the board, my name is Catherine Bailey. I represent Christopher Tiona. If you have any questions, I am here to answer them.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Appreciate it.
You bet.
Anything? Okay. Back to the motion.
Paul Ayler, I move to accept the consent agreement for a 12-month suspension of peace officer certification to run from September 5th, 2018 through September 4th, 2019.
First,
second. I have a motion, second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to the next, 17130, Mr. Brackle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark Brackle with the Attorney General's Office on behalf of Arizona Post. Good afternoon, members of the board, Mr. Chairman.
Also here are Gabriel Terry, the respondent in this matter, and his attorney, Ms. McDaniel. In front of the board is a proposed consent agreement for the board's consideration. It is a stipulated fact agreement. It does not contain a proposed penalty or a proposed sanction. It will be up to the board to impose a sanction. Procedurally, the board initiated a complaint on May 16th, 2018, and in that complaint, the allegation is that on or about the week of December 26, 2016, that then Sergeant Gabriel Terry, who then was employed with the Ogden Police Department, used the racial slur, and specifically that Sergeant Terry, while acting as a field training officer sergeant and was training a Phase 3 trainee, referred to another member of the Ogden Police Department as a token nigger. For those familiar with the Ogden Police Department, I had to learn this, but it's located in Santa Cruz Valley in Pinal County. It employs about 13 sworn officers, and it is an Indian community. The state of Arizona and AZ Post considers use of that term to be a racist insult. Its use implies racism. Its use is considered wrong and unacceptable. And it was used in the context during a training environment, which is why we're here today. As far as the consent agreement, at paragraph number 13, it's clear that respondent has deemed admitted and does not dispute the allegation and complaint. And so what we have is a singular use of a racial slur, and it will be up to the board to met discipline. That's the position of AZ Post. I have done research on what has been the history in front of the board with this kind of an allegation, and when the board is ready for me to share that, I will, if you'd like me to proceed.
You're there.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the board has disciplined for racial slurs on duty in a training environment. And we did research going back 10 years. And in that 10-year period, there have been six cases in front of the board. Here's an example, though. In one of those cases, there were 14 separate documented racial comments by the particular respondent, and in that case he was a lieutenant, and he ended up also being dishonest. He denied saying the 14 documented allegations, and his certification was revoked. In another case that was in front of the board involved a sergeant, and there were 12 separate documented incidences, and there were four separate police officers in that other agency who reported racial slurs by the particular respondent sergeant. In another case, similarly, there were multiple examples of, there were multiple comments by the third, in the third case involving a sergeant, and the comments were to a number of officers based on race, sexual orientation, and national origin. If there is a theme, if there's a constancy through these cases that I have personally read, is that there has been discipline meted, and that in these cases there were multiple instances of use of racial slurs or what would be considered to be harassment. This case is a singular case of making using that statement. And so that will be for the board's consideration.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Donna McDaniel. I'm here for Officer Terry. Also here is Chief Robert and Sergeant Woodard and the Chief Secretary, whose name I can't remember because she didn't embroider it on her shirt like everybody else, and I'm apparently getting old, so I apologize. In a rare situation here, I'm not going to disagree with your attorney at all, but I did just want to address the board to stress something that makes this case different from all the other cases. It's not just that it was a singular use, but I want to talk about how this case came to Officer Terry's attention. Now, the allegation is that he used this slur in December 2017. I don't know if you were on the charging board when the case was originally presented, but at that time you were told that he resigned before he could be interviewed. That was a mistake, a miscommunication. That didn't happen. What actually happened is that the department fired him. They gave him a letter that said, we don't need you anymore, you're out of here. They didn't tell him about the investigation. They didn't do any interviews. They didn't tell him about the allegation. They didn't do an investigation. They didn't do any interviews. They didn't do anything. Now, it took 7 months after that for that department to send its report to POST. And when it sent the report, it was the, used to be called the A1 form, but it's just a form that says, hey, something happened you might be interested in. It was another 9 months after that when they said, hey, this guy used a racial slur. So the problem with this case is that 16 months after this conversation allegedly happened, POST finds out about it, POST tells Chief Roberts, Chief Roberts asks Officer Terry about it, Officer Terry says, I don't even remember the conversation. So the situation that we're in right now is that Officer Terry, who was raised by an African-American stepfather, who is actually friends with the officer that he allegedly said this about, and who is a minority himself, Officer Terry is, because of his integrity, he's not comfortable going to a hearing and offering testimony about a conversation that he doesn't even remember having. What he can do is what he did in the consent agreement and just say, you know, as a minority, as someone raised by an African American man, and as someone who believes in treating all people equally, this is just not a term that I use ever. As to whether what was said during that conversation with the trainee, whether something was said that could have been misconstrued or misunderstood, we simply don't know. And the reason for that, as you'll see in the consent agreement, is not just that 16 months passed between when he allegedly said it and when someone brought it up to him and asked him about it, but during that time period, Officer Terry was going through some personal things. It was a time of great stress. He was trying to get vacation time. He was trying to get out of the training. He just had a lot going on, and he just, during those periods, sometimes your memory just isn't as good as it should be. I really don't have anything else to present to the board, but Mr. Chairman, if you'd allow it, Chief Roberts would like to speak very briefly.
Chief, please, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
I'm going to say good afternoon now. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I just wanted to be here to speak on Officer Terry's behalf. I took over as the Chief of Police at Central Arizona College about 8 months ago after retiring from the Tucson Police Department. I know some of you look at him, that's where you know me from. And I've been at this podium many times, but usually it's on the opposite side. But I'm here to support him. In the short time that I've known him, I have never seen members of the college community love an officer so much. We have a very diverse campus. We have several campuses. And Officer Terry is loved by many people, and different campuses want him to come be the officer at their campus. He's a compassionate person. He's very quiet. As you can see, you can look at him and tell he's quiet. I'm a very intense person, and Director Ryan, you and I've had many conversations over the years. I'm pretty intense. And I'm impressed by his community type of policing. And the man that I've got to learn to know, I cannot see him saying a comment like that in a derogatory way. And I really hope the board looks at this entire case, and you consider, and I don't know if I'm saying this factual, but I think it's in the packet, the person that made this allegation against Officer Terry was a rookie in training who, if I believe I'm correct, was not making it through the field training program. And the way the attorney covered it, the way this whole thing was presented, investigated, just isn't right. And I hope you take all that into consideration, and I really want to keep Officer Terry as a member of my police department. We're a small department. I'm not going to exaggerate. I struggle hiring officers, and I don't want to lose them. Even for a short suspension, it is tough for us. And I believe he's, my personal opinion, I believe he's been through enough, and that's what I want to say.
Thank you very much, Chief. Just real quick, if you don't mind.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mark Brachtel, State of Arizona. The facts are, as they are stipulated in the record in the consent agreement, is that a statement did occur, and it did occur in the capacity of a training environment. And it is correct that the auction department did not notify Officer Terry about the allegation, and nor did they interview him about it. However, the trainee did write a memo. When he reported it that night, he wrote a memo, and it was collected by the executive officer for the Occoquan Police Department at that time. And that's why the state believes that we're here today, is that the evidence is there in the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brack. Comments, questions? If none, may I have a motion, please? Got a question, Paul?
What are our options here as far as...
I think even no action, maybe.
Thank you, Mr. Ehler. The board can met as it sees the discipline should be in this particular instant. That is its option. The state recommends discipline, and I have nothing further.
Thank you, sir.
Just a question, I guess, being the new guy here. So, with this termination, wouldn't that be considered part of the discipline, whether he recognized it or not? So, then with that, taking that into consideration, I'm getting new at this one, so no action from the actually his termination is a discipline action. It doesn't sound like the agency followed protocol.
Chief Kelly, I can only share what I have been informed when I spoke with the executive staff at the Occoquan Police Department, that they are an Indian community, and that their department, they may terminate at will. He was terminated for reasons and was let go. And it wasn't specifically for this incident. It was a number of reasons that are not in the consent agreement, so I can't go into that. But as far as your option, I recommending what the discipline should be, I will leave it to the board's wisdom.
You know, I think with the whole time process on this, lack of due process for the officer, the whole just doesn't sound right. I mean, it's you can't say things like that. I get that. But this whole thing just doesn't seem the due process. And for me, anyway, that's just me speaking. So anyway, any other comments, questions? I'd ask for a motion, if none.
That may make my one and only first.
Your first motion, please, Chief.
I would recommend no action with agency discretion.
Chuck Ryan, second.
I have a motion and a second. Further discussion?
We have to accept the findings.
Have to accept the findings of facts, conclusions of law, mm-hmm. and make a motion of no action, agency discretion. Is that what I heard?
Yep, that's exactly what I spoke
of. Okay, and I had a second.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the board, I think you have before you a consent agreement, decision and order. So it's up. I think you need to address whether or not you're going to accept the consent agreement first.
I think I would ask for a motion to accept. All right, let's start over again with a motion. We've got the...
to go into executive session for some legal advice...
No, I don't want to do that. I just want to... I understand what you're saying. I'm trying to figure out how to get it across. It sounds to me, Chief Kelly, that your motion is accept the consent agreement, findings, facts, conclusion of law, and to say that this is... no action, agency discretion.
Let me try to just give me the attorney look like no.
Okay. Let's see if that works.
Should I try it one more time?
There's still.
If that's motion a motion.
The I don't know.
I think you also have the option to reject the consent agreement and rescind the matter, take no action. So that would be another option here, if you're intending to take no action.
All right, so if I would make a motion to find that facts violates the statutory requirement, as is in the consent agreement, and make a recommendation that we take no action with agency discretion.
That works.
Will that work? We're accepting the consent agreement as a statutory violation on the face of the complaint, and then just make a recommendation to take no action and accept the with the agency discretion. No?
So yes. Who's going to contest that?
Great.
Well, I...
Not me.
Not me.
If that's your motion...
Seth, you're looking pretty troubled over there. What's going on?
I can't speak on it.
Oh, all right. You just look troubled.
I think I know what they're looking at.
All right.
Do you want me to rescind mine?
Yeah.
Let me rescind my motion and take it on somebody that has more experience doing the legal.
I would make a motion to reject the consent agreement decision and order and put under agency discretion.
Chris Pittman, second.
Motion, second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Moving on. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chief. Thank you, guys. We're moving on to 18137. Ken, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Henry. How are you? I'll make this brief. Case number 18137. On December 18th, 2018, the board voted to initiate proceedings against peace officer certification held by Mr. John Gomez, a former corporal with the La Paz County Sheriff's Office. A notice of complaint was sent to Mr. Gomez regular and certified U.S. mail, and on January 4, 2019, Mr. Gomez signed the receipt for the certified notice. However, to date, has made no contact with the Arizona Post. In summary, on August 18, 2018, Corporal John M. Gomez sexually assaulted and abused a female deputy from the same agency while they were at an off-duty party at Corporal Gomez's residence. The deputy was waiting for a ride home from another coworker and alone with Corporal Gomez in the kitchen area. At this time, Corporal Gomez attacked and forced his hand down the deputy's pants and underwear and touched her genitalia. Corporal Gomez then sexually abused the deputy as he forced his hand up the deputy's shirt and fondled her breast. The deputy was able to fight off further assaults made by Corporal Gomez and escape from the residence. Afterwards, the La Paz County Sheriff's Command staff was notified, and the Yuma County Sheriff initiated a criminal investigation to avoid possible conflict of interest with the other agency. When interviewed, Corporal Gomez admitted to sexually abusing his coworker, but related that due to his high level of intoxication, he did not recall sexually assaulting her. As a result, Corporal Gomez was arrested, indicted, and arraigned on October 1, 2018. On October 22, 2018, Corporal Gomez was subsequently terminated from the La Paz County Sheriff's Office. This morning, compliance specialist Mr. Steve Jacobs checked on the status of Mr. Gomez's Superior Court disposition. On March 11, 2019, there was a status conference, possible change of plea, and unfortunately, the public court records have not been updated with new information. Research by Arizona Post staff determined in past similar fact-based circumstances, the board action resulted in revocation.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Motion, please.
I, Paul Ehler, I'd make a motion that we accept the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and impose the sanction of revocation.
Second.
Motion, second. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, sir. Mr. Henry, moving on to 18116.
On October 17, 2018, the board voted to initiate proceedings against the peace officer certification held by Daniel F.
Irvin, a former City of Police officer. On October 30th, 2018, a notice of complaint was sent by regular and certified U.S. mail to Mr. Irvin, who subsequently signed the receipt. On November 19th, 2018, Mr. Irvin requested a hearing. On November 16th, 2019, Mr. Irvin withdrew his request for a hearing and submitted notice that he wished to resign his peace officer certification. On January 30th of 2019, a notice was received from Mr. Irvin declining to voluntarily relinquish his peace officer certification due to the fact that permanent status of his certification. Regardless, Mr. Irvin maintained his position to withdraw his request from a hearing. It should be noted that all correspondence between Arizona Post personnel and Mr. Irvin has been made through Mr. Irvin's attorney. In summary, on August 24, 2017, Officer Daniel Irvin was on duty and involved in a single vehicle collision causing damage to his patrol vehicle and failed to report the accident and or damage to the vehicle as required. On September 8th of 2017, police supervisors were able to pinpoint when the damage of the police vehicle most likely occurred. As a result, they questioned Mr. Officer Irvin about the matter. And Officer Irvin told them that he first noticed the damage while on a call for service at an apartment complex and lied about the fact that he had indeed caused the damage. Officer Irvin's chain of command believed Officer Irvin was lying about the incident and subsequently forwarded the matter to their Professional Standards Bureau, PSB. On September 13, 2017, PSB investigators initiated an administrative accident investigation, and Officer Irvin was provided Garrity through a notice of investigation NOI. While under NOI, Officer Irvin continued to be untruthful about his involvement until PSB investigators mentioned there might be cameras at the apartment complex where Officer Irvin first noticed the damage. Officer Irvin then advised PSB investigators that his memory was re-jogged and admitted to striking a concrete pillar at the apartment complex and causing damage to the patrol vehicle. Afterwards, Officer Irvin was issued a second NOI for lying to his immediate supervisors and PSB personnel. While under investigation, Officer Irvin initially denied that he lied to supervisors and PSB and just happened to recall the totality of the information as he was being interviewed. After further questioning, Officer Irvin ultimately informed PSB investigators that he was untruthful with his responses to his immediate supervisors back on September 8, 2017, as well as his interview conducted that day. Officer Irvin admitted that he was scared of what might happen to him and that he had previously been involved in three at-fault accidents prior to this investigation. As a result, Officer Irvin was terminated from the Phoenix Police Department on July 23rd of 2018. Research by Arizona Post staff has determined in the past similar fact-based circumstances. The board's action resulted in voluntary relinquishment to revocation.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? May I have a motion?
Paul, I'll make a motion to accept the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and impose a sanction of revocation.
Second.
We have a motion, second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. We're going to be moving into new cases, and I believe case number 1 and 2 are tabled or will be continued, so we're going to be moving in to case number 18-024, case number 3. Mr. Caldwell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Billy Caldwell, Winter Compliance Specialist. This case involves former Mason Police Officer Eric Hask. On December 15, 2017, near 0157 hours, a Phoenix police officer stopped a vehicle driven by off-duty Mesa Officer Cask. Officer Cask had run a red light, failed to come to a complete stop at another intersection, and failed to maintain the line of travel. The Phoenix officer noticed manifestations of intoxication, but Officer Cask declined to perform field sobriety evaluations. Officer Cask was placed under arrest that night, and lab testing later determined his blood alcohol concentration at the time of the incident was 0.201. Officer Katz later told IA investigators he consumed numerous alcoholic beverages over the course of the evening in Scottsdale and did not remember getting into his car to drive home. On February 13, 2018, Officer Katz pled guilty to one count of driving under the extreme influence of intoxicating liquor in Scottsdale City Court. He retired from the Mesa Police Department on January 24, 2018. I'd be glad to answer any questions that y'all might have about this case.
Having no questions, may I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I recommend we initiate proceedings.
Paul Wheeler, second.
I have a motion, second. Further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Caldwell. Ms. Haas, good afternoon. We're working on case 19-008.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Kathy Haas, one of your compliance specialists. This case is referenced former Tucson Police Department officer September Bostick. On June 11, 2018, the property owner of a private residence in Tucson scheduled a home inspection consistent with the Arizona Landlord-Tenant Act. Officer Bostick and Ms. Y currently resided at that location. Ms. KB, the property manager, and Ms. CB, a real estate agent, were tasked with conducting that inspection. They allege Officer Bostick refused them access to the bedrooms, citing her occupation as a police officer as the basis for her knowledge of the law regarding the matter. Officer Bostick provided a statement to TPD Office of Professional Standards investigators that was inconsistent with Ms. KB's and Ms. CB's account of the events. OPS sustained allegations of untruthfulness and actions off-duty, calling into question her moral and ethical character. They also determined it did not seem plausible or reasonable for Ms. KB and Ms. CB to allege Bostick never mentioned her position as a law enforcement officer if it did not, in fact, occur. They had nothing to gain from this and at no time requested the agency take action against Officer Bostick. Bostick was a probationary employee at the time of this investigation and was terminated prior to its completion. Based on the sustained allegations, the disciplinary sanction by TPD would have been termination. Any questions?
No questions. Can I have a motion, please?
Make a motion to initiate proceedings.
Jamie Kelly, second.
I have a motion, second. Further discussion?
If you're going to initiate proceedings, you're going to have to identify which rule violations you feel were involved.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, because she was gone before the investigation was over, it was determined by staff that we really should probably resolve this in the future because there are a couple, unanswered questions, I guess, that still remain.
Thank you for bringing that up. That might change the motion that might...
I'll rescind my motion, knowing that, to make a motion to resolve in the future.
Jamie Kelly, second.
The motion, second. Seth, anything else?
You're good.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Jacobs, 19-011.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this involves an officer who's worked with a few agencies down in the Yuma County area. During November 2018, he made application with the Kachan Tribal Police Department, which is at Fort Yuma, Arizona. During that background process, he admitted that when he was 32 years of age, after becoming a certified officer, that he had come to Phoenix while off duty and engaged in an act of prostitution. And he willfully disclosed that during the pretest examination, during this examination. When the examiner questioned him regarding his truthfulness of this incident when he made application with the Kokopal Tribal Police Department in 2010, he admitted that he had willfully withheld that information. Are there any questions?
No questions. Can I have a motion, please?
Paul Ehler. I'll make a motion that we initiate proceedings.
Thank you, sir. Can I have a second?
Chuck Ryan, second.
Motion second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. O'Rose, we're moving on to 18-144. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This case came to the attention of Post as a result of reviewing the documentation from a previous Arizona Post case, 2018-110. It was based on the information from that case. A determination was made that there was evidence of potential misconduct by another employee of the Arizona Department of Transportation. A little bit of background. The person involved is Christy Tenzinga. Background on her. On April 9, 2018, Tenzinga had transferred from a sworn position with the Arizona Department of Transportation to a civilian supervisor position. As a result of her transfer, her peace officer certification went from active to inactive. But the actual case here, on June 25th, Tenzinga and her supervisor, referred to as DF, were traveling on duty in a state of Arizona vehicle from the St. George port of entry to Fredonia when DF pulled off to the side of the road, parked, and then while they were parked, Tenzinga and her supervisor began kissing and engaged in sexual conduct. Then later on that same day, while they were back at the St. George port of entry, when they were in their office together, they again engaged in sexual conduct while on duty. During this encounter, Tenzinga's shirt was removed and DF's pants were dropped and they fondled each other, and that occurred inside the port of entry. On August 1st, during the Arizona Department of Transportation's first interview with Tenzinga, she was less than truthful when she stated that during the sexual conduct in the vehicle, she told DF, "What are you doing?" a couple times, and also kind of pushed him away. On August 16th, 2018, during the Arizona Department of Transportation's second interview with Tenzinga, she admitted that she did not really say anything to DF. She did not kind of push him away, and she also admitted that she did not give DF any indication that she wanted him to stop. Tenzinga was less than truthful when she made statements during both interviews, the one on August 1st and the one on August 16th, that while she did not do anything to indicate that she wanted DF to stop, she did not encourage him either. During the Arizona Department of Transportation's interview with DF, he admitted that he initiated both sexual contact encounters, but Tenzinga was an active participant. When Tenzinga was confronted with the statements made by DF during his interview, and she was pressed by the investigator about her involvement in the sexual encounters, that's when she finally admitted that she was an active participant in at least the sexual encounter in the St. George port of entry. Based on Tenzinga's less than forthcoming information in this investigation and in an effort to determine Tenzinga's truthfulness, the investigator questioned Tenzinga about an alleged relationship with another Department of Transportation employee referred to as SD. Tenzinga denied any sexual contact with SD. She denied that she and SD had a sexual relationship, and she also denied that she had sent any sexually explicit pictures or videos to SD. During SD's interview, he admitted that there was sexual contact between him and Tenzinga, and that she had sent him sexually explicit pictures and videos over approximately a one-year period of time. One thing to note, in the executive summary of the Department of Transportation investigation, the investigator makes the statement, "It's clear that Tenzinga gave false, inaccurate, and or misleading statements during the investigation." I'll be happy to answer any questions.
No questions. May I have a motion, please?
Paul Ehler, I'll make a motion. We initiate proceedings.
Second.
Motion second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Good afternoon, Ms. Waitlaw, 19014, and you're the last up to bat.
Yes, sir, I'll make it quick. Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the board. Lori Waite, one of your compliance specialists. This case, 19-014 on Michael Gallego, formerly with the Arizona Department of Public Safety. On January 22nd of this year, our compliance specialist, Kathy Hawes, conducted a new hire audit on Gallego for DPS. The polygraph report contained within the background, which was dated last August 2018, indicated that Gallego was not truthful when he was asked two questions in reference to a serious crime against a person and a serious property crime. When the polygraph examiner questioned Gallego further about these two relevant questions, Gallego admitted that he had failed to disclose an assault that he had committed at or around the age of 17 during his pre-polygraph interview, because he said there were a lot of things in the news about police officers using excessive force, and he didn't want to look like an overly violent person. Just so you know, he was afforded five different opportunities during the pre-polygraph interview to disclose this assault, and he did not. The agency went ahead and appointed him. They sent him to the Phoenix Regional Police Academy. However, he was terminated from DPS on March 11th of this year. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
So he's not currently attending the Phoenix Regional Academy?
No. Since this case was presented to the board last month on February 20th, he has since been terminated, and that termination date was March 11th.
Thank you.
Any other questions? May I have a motion? Normally on this, it's kind of like a no action agency. What do we normally do on this type of situation?
Well, based upon the conduct, the board in the past has initiated proceedings.
Have they? Okay. I just want to make sure we're being consistent. That's why I asked. We have new board members. I think, you know, a lot of times it's good to ask what we... So anyway, that's all I'm doing.
Okay. So as a new board member, can I do something right?
Yeah.
Initiate proceedings.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second them.
A motion, second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Any future agenda items?
At 12:30, I would do that.
Okay, then we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
Chairman, you do have a call to the public on there?
Oh, I do? Where? Oh, I have a speaker sign-up form, Gabriel Terry. Oh.
But there was an agenda item for call to the public, so.
I don't see that.
It may not be a specific.
All right. Is anybody want to get up and say anything? Thank you all very much.